Most serious Little League dad fanatics like myself have the thought after the last game, it sure would be nice to have just one more year of Little League. And I had that thought, and I took it one step beyond. And before long, I had this plot all concocted about a dad. In the movie, it's Harry Connick Jr., who takes that step and cheats, cuts some corners, conspires, and he gets one more year of Little League baseball with his son, with disastrous results.
Well, there was a controversy over the boy who played Little League, pitched a perfect game, what he hurled about 70 miles an hour, and he was actually 14.
Danny Almonte, 2001. I don't know if he won his first game in Williamsport. I think it was a perfect game. There's only been one perfect game before Almonte, and that was back in the 1950s, a kid from Mexico who was ambidextrous, pitched with both hands in the World Series. And they made a movie out of that called Little Giants, and it was the last movie Little League Baseball approved until Mickey.
The screenplay is a little different from your usual legalese, but there are some similarities to the other things that you've written, too.
Well, the dad is a lawyer who is down on his luck, a small-time practitioner who is in a bit of a jam legally and financially. The kid's mom, Mickey's mom, died a year earlier. You don't meet her in the movie, but her illness took up a lot of the family resources, and it got the dad in a lot of hot water. And so when the movie opens, he's got to leave town in a hurry. And that's when they surface in Las Vegas a few weeks later with new names and new addresses and new papers and a new birth certificate for Mickey.
You played Little League ball in Mississippi.
Long time ago.
That was back in the 60s.
Yeah, very fond memories of Little League baseball.
Is that what inspired you here?
Well, I was more inspired by coaching than playing. I played as a kid, and, you know, like all of us, I had big dreams of playing for the Cardinals, and I was lucky to play in high school with my talent. I just wasn't very good, but I still had big dreams. And when my son came along, he was 7 years old in 1990, and he wanted to play baseball. And fortunately for me at that time, the firm was about to come out, and life was about to change dramatically for me, and I had a lot of spare time. And so I'm still doing it. I've spent a lot of time the last 14 years working with kids and youth baseball.
This project started out for you a long time ago as a book, but you scrapped the book idea.
I think the book made it past page two and did not make it past page three. I found it impossible to capture action, sports action, baseball action. It's so visual. That's why we go to games and watch games. It's something you can't really describe. You got to see, and it became a movie.
How was director Hugh Wilson instrumental in getting that movie made?
A few years ago, we started talking about doing something together, maybe a small independent film that we could film locally, stay at home, maybe, you know, raise some money, maybe finance it ourselves. And that's how it got started.
No studio, no outside money?
Hugh doesn't like studios. Most directors don't. And I don't really have to deal with them when I sell film rights to one of my books.
From a distribution standpoint, though, it's pretty difficult to get a movie out there without the studio.
It is much easier to make a movie independently than to distribute independently. Most independent films that are successful, and there are a few but not a whole lot, have to have some type of distribution deal with one of the companies in Hollywood.
You play a small role in the film.
Probably the low point of the film. I make my acting debut.
You save some money there, too.
I saved $10,000 by being in the movie because I worked for free. It was actually an enjoyable experience. It's not one I want to repeat. I've had numerous opportunities to have funny little cameos in my movies.
Kind of like Stephen King?
Stephen King is a ham. He loves to be in his movies, as does Hugh Wilson, my partner in crime here. I have never been tempted. Until now, and I hope I'm never tempted again.
Why Birmingham?
Well, it's the South. It's home. It's always been very good to me as far as books. We picked areas where areas that are just rich in baseball, and Birmingham and Alabama certainly are fertile areas for youth baseball, college baseball, even professional baseball.
I'm going to throw you a curveball.
I never could hit a curveball.
How is Southern literature today? You were around the place of Eudora Welty and William Faulkner, and you look at, the Oxford American, the magazine that you financed for so many years, mm-hmm. and it went away. It was sold just recently. Is that symbolic of the lack of reading, of the lack of desire to read Southern literature?
I don't think that magazine is symbolic. That magazine is a perfect example of how treacherous that business is these days,
the magazine business.
As far as Southern literature, obviously we don't have the giant that we've always had, you know, the Welty or the Faulkner, the Willie Morris. But there are always, almost every year, a new crop of young Southern writers who are writing good books about the South. The place is still unique. The setting is still rich. The heritage is there. There's still, human suffering and conflict, and that's what creates, great fiction. I'm encouraged. I mean, I've never been discouraged about it. I don't write Southern books. I'm not a Southern writer. I'm a writer who lives in the South. But I don't think we're going to see a shortage of young Southern voices.
John Grisham, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Always nice being in Birmingham.
Author John Grisham, whose movie Mickey debuts tonight at the Alice Stevens Center in Birmingham. I'm Steve Chiatakis.